Hi.
Hey, one of you answered. What the fuck is going on?
I have no idea. Every once in a while, my computer's not off. Like I just leave it sleeping and I turn it back on. I open it back up. And it doesn't recognize that I have any audio like headphones on or anything.
That's weird that Chris is now not able to. You answered, and
No, what? And now Chris can't get on.
now Chris can't get on.
What is he say, is he saying anything or he just didn't join?
I don't know. It looks like it's ringing.
Maybe he had a poop.
Maybe. This is weird. Oh, there he is. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, we've
Wow.
been waiting for you for 25 minutes, Chris.
Yeah, right. I
He
know.
had technical difficulties because of his Jubilee reading before we record.
Know
Yeah,
what?
her.
I
The only
was a
thing her
little late.
powers are good for is screwing up Skype.
I was watching some X-Men cartoon. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It's really bad. Really, really bad.
What did you give it? A 6 out of 10? Like you rate
Four.
all the movies I love like a 6 out of 10. Like, what the
What
hell
did I
is
give?
that?
What did I give a 6 out of 10
I
to?
don't know. I just usually look at your scores and I'm like, that's bullshit.
That's a 3 out of 5. I liked it. I liked it.
You didn't watch it, did you?
What's wrong with I like it?
No, I know, but you didn't watch it, did you?
Watch what?
The cartoon.
No, I didn't watch the cartoon.
I
I
know
can't
he didn't
believe it.
because he. I know he didn't because if he did, he'd be saying, "Oh, I'm surprised it was actually pretty good."
Let me ask you a question. In all honesty, is it a very good cartoon, or was it a good cartoon when you were young in the 90s?
It was a good cartoon because I wasn't young in the
Well, I know
90s.
you weren't, but I mean
I mean, I
Christopher.
wasn't that young either when I
You were a
saw
young
it.
man. You were like 11.
I didn't see it when it was coming out.
Oh, okay.
Well, why does
Well, I
my
might have seen
opinion
a few
matter?
episodes. I might have seen a few episodes, but I don't
No, it
think I
does
was that
matter,
into
but
comics,
you
though.
were an older guy. I was just wondering with somebody that watched it as a little kid.
Well, why
Because
would an adult matter?
but I was just wondering. That's all
Wouldn't
that I.
that matter more than a little kid?
Perhaps.
That
And
means that it
also,
would
like.
hold up, right?
Well, for. Well, yeah, I mean, for. I was wondering if. People that saw it as a kid and then saw it again as an adult, if they had the same experience where you were an adult already. So that kind of doesn't, you're looking at through it from the same eyes. So I
What
was just wondering
years
if
did
Chris
that
had a
run?
change.
That had to run in the late 80s, right?
No, it
Was
was like
no, early
early
net like
90s.
92, I think, right?
Yeah.
It was that late?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. I was watching that as a grown ass man.
Yes, you were, yeah.
I was already like a junior in college.
I was like a freshman or a sophomore.
Yeah. But you didn't have a. I had a VCR, see, and I'd tape it. And then I'd watch them.
Yeah, when was it on? On Saturdays?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What channel?
Fox.
Oh, okay.
It was good. I mean, that's when. I guess for me, I've never been into the X-Men. Like I said, my brother and I, we tended to collect books that the other one didn't, and he'd get the X-Men books and I would not. And I started watching the cartoon and I enjoyed it, and I started getting the X-Men books at the time because of the cartoon.
Well, where can I watch this show for free?
Yeah, Barb even watched it, so I just don't have respect for you even, Rob.
That's not very nice to
No,
say.
I'm just kidding.
I
Barb
can't.
watched the cartoon.
It looks like I have to pay for it on Amazon. I don't know if anyone has it for free. I'm
Yeah, that's
certainly
the
not going to
trouble
pay to
because
watch
it
it.
used to be on Netflix, but I don't think it is anymore, so that might be how you get out of this.
Oh, you could wait for the Disney streaming, I'm sure.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Did you sign up for the DC All Access or whatever it is called? DC Entertainment or Universe?
No. I'll just wait for more new stuff to come, and then I'll sign up for it. But like, we're only going to get the Titans this whole year, so it's just I want to hear from you guys how much comic book stuff is on there before I commit.
But you got out of you got out of the Marvel Unlimited already, right?
No, I still have it through February.
Are you still? Are you going to get out?
Oh, if I can get another sale, I'll probably stick with it because I'm actually going lighter on some Marvel books.
Oh yeah, so you're gonna use it for like the titles that you know you don't have to have, but you would like to read. Yeah.
But you know, I want to read them, but yeah, but I'm not gonna I won't necessarily collect them anymore. You know, it's so far I haven't gone very heavy towards that, but I'm planning on doing more of that as like other titles kind of end.
Before we get into the retro, I have one question for you, Rob. Are you going to go in all on the Spider-Geddon thing?
No, I'm not going to get it. That's one that I'm just going to read on Unlimited.
Yeah, it's interesting because it looks like the main title is not participating.
Yeah, I'm like just going to do
Unlimited. Amazing is not. So I am because I'm worried. I'm worried I'm going to get that Spider-Gwen thing and then have to spend $40 on a book. So I'm just going to go all in.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the events I'm trying to hold off on now and just read them after the fact.
Yeah.
I guess I don't feel like I need to own them. Whereas like some of the regular series, I still want to get, whether it's Captain America or Spider-Man.
How about you, Chris? Does the DC Universe Online thing appeal to you at all, or is it because you don't know what comics are going to be on there that you're a little hesitant?
Yeah, I'll have to wait and see what comics they're going to put on there.
Yeah.
Because the shows don't interest me. I mean, Titans looks like total garbage. Oh my god, it looks terrible.
Watch your mouth.
I think it looks great.
Oh my god, it looks so bad. I was dying laughing watching it. It's like, it looks like one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life.
I can't believe what I'm hearing here.
I think it looks good. I'm going to
watch.
Oh,
man.
I think it looks interesting. I'm very excited about the titles of the episodes because, it kind of tells you, okay, Hawk and Dove, Doom Patrol, so on and so forth. Wow. So I'm definitely, I really do want to watch that. It's just that I don't know that I need to spend the whatever it is.
Until they have more on it, right?
Until they have more, right. So, like, next year, they're going to add, Swamp Thing and, like, all. I mean, it sounds really, really interesting. I'll just wait and then, once there's a lot on there, then I'll subscribe. The only reason that I'll change my mind is if you get it and Martin gets it and Daryl and Chris are getting it and you guys say, oh, you know what? It says it's a curated thing of comics, but there's a ton of stuff available, then I'll probably change my mind.
Yeah.
But that curated word scares me. It makes it sound like they're just cherry picking like what they want to promote.
Yeah.
Rather than having everything of, a lot
of things available. I think it's going to be like a rotating list. I don't think it's going to keep growing. I mean, from what I've heard, like their library, I don't think it's going to be like Marvel Unlimited where it just grows.
Right.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing curated sounds like to me. It's going to be a rotating selection. But, I mean, that doesn't immediately mean that I'm out. If there's a lot of stuff at any given time and there's a decent amount of older stuff. It'll just depend. And it also might mean that it'd be the type of thing to dip in and then, subscribe for a month and then subscribe for a month again later and stuff. And I'm sorry to be so harsh about Titans. I really did think that the preview anyways looked really bad to me.
I liked it. I think maybe it, I think Raven looked really good. Hawk and Dove looked amazing, and if they do that right, I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I agree. The only one that I don't, and I definitely don't condone like yelling at the actresses and being rude, but I really don't think that Starfire looks great. It looks weird to me. It doesn't look like.
I don't think it matters to me.
It's definitely a tough character to pull off.
Sure. But I mean, I think about like people that I've seen as cosplaying, and I know that's one thing to just walk around and not have to do any acting or action scenes. But you know, I've seen cosplayers that look so much better than that looks.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've seen like even ones that are kind of taking a similar approach with like an African actress. I feel like I've seen ones that look better, but
yeah,
I don't tend to care. Like, personally, I don't want my comics in my TV. Like, if you take the concept and just make something with it that's different, I'm all for it. Like, Gotham is my favorite show, and that's never been in the comics. So
yeah, I mean that's
I'm fine with that.
That's not my criticism. Like, you know. It doesn't matter to me if Starfire looks like she does in the comics so much as that it looks good. And I mean, at least from the preview, it didn't look very good to me. But
so what was your biggest concern, Chris, about the preview itself? The tone?
Yeah, I mean, they could go with whatever tone they want, but it all seems super melodramatic. It didn't give me much confidence about the writing of the show. It just seemed kind of a little ridiculous. Just way like too over the top, like too teenage angsty. Like they're really going to try to like communicate like, oh, we're, you know, to teenagers that the show is cool, but like missing the mark. You know, and everyone kind of joked about the fuck Batman thing, and I mean, it made me laugh, and I don't think that that's what they were going for. Like,
I actually think they put that there for a reason. I think they put that there to say this isn't for your kids.
Yeah,
don't get a misconception thinking that this is going to be, you could sit with your 6-year-old or 7-year-old and watch Titans together. I think
I'm sitting with Zach and Allie next year and watching Titans. They're going to sit there. They're going to sit there and they're going to like it.
Maybe Titans go, but.
And then they're going to be like, you're going to tell them what to do. And they're going to be like, fuck dad, man.
Right.
Have you seen Titans Go? It's really good.
The movie?
The movie, the movie.
No, we were thinking If It Rains Tomorrow, me and my wife are off. I was thinking maybe we'd take them to see the movie. If not, our county fair is going on, and we went a little bit yesterday, so we might go again tomorrow.
The one thing I like about it is there's so much in-depth jokes for like deep, hardcore fans.
The preview was incredible. I'm like, at first I thought it was like a joke of a movie that they're making this. And then I saw the preview, like, oh, this looks fantastic.
Yeah. There were parts that were a little slow when it, like, I'm not into like the musical part of stuff. Like when they go into music and singing, I don't care about that, but the humor of it. And when things were hitting on the right tone, I really dug it. And it's got some obscure stuff in there that's pretty neat. Like if you're
it looks interesting.
Yeah, it's like.
Well, why is that okay, Rob? But X-Men is like PJ Masks.
What? PJ Masks is a good show.
What is PJ Masks?
PJ Masks. It's masks like, you know, like superhero masks.
Yeah.
So PJ Masks is these three elementary school kids, and they put on their pajamas and they turn into superheroes. There's Gecko, Owlette, and Catboy, and they fight criminals such as Romeo.
Is it an animated show then, or live action?
No, it's animated.
I know about it because my nephew likes it.
Yeah, it's a good show.
He was telling my wife that she's Owlette and he's
Catboy, right?
Catboy, yeah. He has to be Catboy. Mm.
Ellie likes to be Catboy, and Zach likes to be Gecko.
Oh, okay.
I don't know
why. So you get to be Owlette.
I'm Owlette, yeah.
Nice. I expect you to cosplay that at like the next Buffalo.
Hey, if no, I won't do that. But if the kids want to dress up as DJ Masks, I would.
I think you should go with them.
You think so?
Yeah, I think you should do it.
Why not?
I'd do it. If I was going to the con with you and they were dressing up and you were not going to do it, I'd do it.
Oh, I know you would. You're a lot of fun. One of my favorite videos ever. You know what one of my favorite videos is I think that you were at one of the locations of one of the cons and you stopped and you started dancing with that big chicken.
Oh, it's the Hooter, the Hooter owl.
Yeah. The best.
You did a good job imitating that.
It's yeah, I kind of have the belly for it too. Like we had the same physique.
It was incredible.
I kind of look like it. A balloon. It's like two balloons bouncing together.
No, that was fantastic.
Okay, so Rob, when you said that, you compared X-Men.
I was just being a wise guy.
So you actually like Paw Patrol and PJ Masks, and so you're actually saying that you would like to.
I was just being silly. I was just giving you a hard time because you keep giving me a hard time about X-Men.
I think it would be. Let's watch these kids shows. I think if you can put yourself in that time frame, you would like it. But I think if you would compare it to like animated stuff today, you might not like it.
If I can find somewhere to get this, to watch this for free, I'll be happy to watch it. And I'm sure I would like it. Because guess what? I like X-Men.
Yeah.
I just happened to be just starting college and stuff and at the time, and I'm like, oh, I'm too cool to be watching this cartoon. Like I'll watch the ironic cartoons like Animaniacs, but I'm not going to watch this. Are you kidding me? I'm a guy getting into college here. I'm too cool for that.
College man.
Yeah, I'm a college man.
Yeah, that makes sense. It hits you at the wrong time.
Yeah.
But I think that's what Mike said is true. Like you can tell from my recollection, it's been a while since I've seen it, but you could tell it's from the early 90s. There's some stuff that will be kind of cheesy because of that. But I think that you'll appreciate the adaptation of the X-Men, and I think you'll enjoy like some of the characters that show up and some of the like Easter eggs and stuff.
Oh, really?
That would be my guess.
I'm gonna do a search and see if it's anywhere, because I've got Hulu, I've got Prime, and we know that it's not available there, and I've got Netflix. So I'll see if it's available any of those three places.
I have a question for you, Chris. Was Morph created for that show, or did he exist before?
Morph?
I remember Morph on the animated show, but not being an X-Men before that time, because he was kind of a big character in that animated show.
Morph was from the Age of Apocalypse, but I don't know which came first.
I think the animated one did, because the Age of Apocalypse went off into he went into the Exiles and stuff, right, Morph?
Uh-huh.
So, like, I don't know. I think he was in the cartoon.
It could be that he was...
He was in the cartoon. He had an X-Men, like, outfit, and he looked human. He didn't have that weird alien-looking face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know this is off the top of my head, but I guess he was... He did first appear in the animated series, kind of, but he was based off of... Changeling from
X-Men
35.
Oh.
Like the Roy the character, like when Roy Thomas was writing X-Men way back when. So he's kind of based on that character, but he's pretty much was new. But yeah, I don't see X-Men the Animated Series anywhere right now, which maybe that's Mike's right, and that's because Disney is going to put it on the thing, but it does look like it's on YouTube, at least right now, until someone asks it to be taken down. But
oh, well, then I can check it out there, right?
You can watch it on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out if that was like...
Oh, the kids watch it with me.
Harlequin or Renee Montoya that appeared in animation first and then went to the comics. I didn't remember Morph before that, before the cartoon.
I don't think I remembered that Renee Montoya came from the show first.
Yeah.
Just, I think, reminded me of that.
You know why it's on YouTube? Because they're getting around the algorithm to recognize copyrighted material by putting a window within the window.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
So they set up like a graphic, like in this case it says X-Men across the top, and there's like a cartoon picture of Wolverine on the left.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a smaller window that's like made to look like it's a TV.
So somebody like recorded it off their TV, but it's not. They're simulating it.
Yeah, so it looks, the way it works is that it somehow gets around the YouTube algorithm to recognize the copyright, because it's like seeing the border that they put around it.
Yeah. So it's not like a real live video. It's a video within a video. Yeah.
It's not.
So
a
I wonder
one-to-one.
How crappy that's going to look if I try to watch it on TV.
Kind of crappy, because it makes the actual video small, and you got to look at a cartoon Wolverine on the left.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't want. Maybe it's not very ideal. But wait till the Disney thing comes out and give Disney more money, because obviously they don't have enough. And,
well, they need it more than we do. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I was watching Gotham, and me and Barb were watching it, and we're on the final season, and they had like a Toy Man character, and I'm like, who the hell is this? And we looked up his name, and he's the toy maker that was introduced in the Batman animated cartoon, not the animated series, but the Batman. And I just watched it, and his name was like Clank. And I was like, that's pretty cool, because I remember him being, he was like a joke of a character in the cartoon, because he was the, like a villain that grew up in his mom's basement as like a fan, and then just became like a villain for Batman. But they had him in Gotham, and I thought that was interesting. I'm always fascinated with like things that are introduced in TV and or cartoons and then make their way into the comics the inverse way. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times those don't hit very well. And every once in a while you get, you know, some lightning in a bottle, like a Harley Quinn and some other characters where it's like becomes super popular.
Yeah.
I got a quick question for you, Mike, before we do the retro too. Are you getting the DC Core statues?
The DC Core statues. I'm not sure I know what those are.
They were solicited about first one, maybe it was about 6 months ago. The first one was Joker, so you should have gotten that.
Oh, no, I didn't get them.
Oh, I'm getting them. They're beautiful, and they're vinyl, so they're super cheap. But they look like
saw
Joker Kane.
The
that
price
looks amazing.
Point, the price point was well. I just, I have no room for statues at all, like zero.
Yeah.
So, like, they either stay in a box because they're just so cool, or I need to move into a bigger house. I mean, the only statues I'm buying now, but I am going to get the Big Barda because it's Big Barda. But I bought the Viper and the Galactica and stuff just because I love Battlestar Galactica. And even though they're on the new series, which I like the new series, but it's not like the old. The Viper still looks like the classical Viper. And the Galactica, for the most part, looks like the classical Galactica. It's the Cylon... I forget what the Cylon ship's called. ship that looks drastically different in the new incarnation as opposed
to bigger,
the classic.
The bigger ship?
No, the one...
The Cylon Raider?
That Cylon Raider, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The ships looked more like an oval shaped.
Yeah.
In the classical. And this one, they look more like I don't know, like they cut the mid part out and it looks like a raptor, like a bird of some sort.
Well, you know, I love the new series. I've watched very little of the original, but in terms of the designs, I think it's just because it's what I remember growing up. But I love those old versions of those ships.
Chris, do you remember we were covering the Battlestar Galactica and they stopped showing it?
Yeah.
Is that why you guys stopped talking about it?
Yeah, they stopped showing it on Netflix.
Netflix.
But gotcha. Do you get MeTV?
On regular TV, we do. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do.
They have Galactica on there. I was asking Chris if he has that.
I don't know if it's included in our.
It's usually what, like the local.
Who do you have for service, Chris?
Spectrum.
Okay. I thought they have to leave.
They might have to, yeah. But they have to transition it over to another company if they do leave. But I'm sure they're going to be fighting it in court for a while.
Why do they have to leave?
Thieves. They made a deal with the state to expand the state broadband network. They had taken over from Time Warner.
Yeah.
And they made a deal with the state, and the state's stating that they haven't followed through with what they like the benchmarks that they were supposed to hit. And they're saying they did, but the state is saying that they're counting like residences in like New York City and stuff like that, which definitely don't count as rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be like battling out in court for a while, but basically like, this New York State is looking to kick them out of the state.
But that's in the question. Case, like, what would you use for service?
Well, in which case they have to maintain service through a transitionary period to whatever company takes over for them.
Gotcha.
So there wouldn't be an interruption in service, but
interesting.
Well, so we didn't even know we had MeTV, but the thing that I like about it, it's like TV Land used to be. It's like they show like classic TV, like The Love Boat. They show like Wonder Woman, with Linda Carter. I hear, but I haven't confirmed that they're showing the Swamp Thing TV show back from USA Today when it was the live action.
Oh wow. I haven't checked it. I mean, we have it, and I've watched stuff on there, whether it was Leave It to Beaver or Happy Days or whatever.
It's
but
starting to become my favorite channel because that's when like I really like love TV because there was only like four stations, and there was I don't know, just there was time when I watched shows with my family, and I don't know, it's like this retro feel that I get when I watch that station. And then on Saturday nights, they have, like, a weird host that dressed like a ghoul.
It's Svengoolie. Like
Svengoolie, yeah.
Oh.
that is cool, man. He shows some cool movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a throwback to, like, the horror hosts.
Yeah, like the Elviras and the...
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's awesome.
Elvira. I don't remember all the details, but this woman has led a very, very interesting life.
Yeah, she has.
She was like a dancing girl, a showgirl, in Vegas, and she was only like 16 or 17, so they had to fake her age. And then she went to Paris to do the same stuff, and when she eventually started doing the Elvira stuff, she was on this local station, you know, wherever she was. You know, basically being paid peanuts, right?
Yeah.
And her ratings started going through the roof. So when it was time to negotiate, she's asking for more money. They couldn't give her any more money. And the station owned the rights to everything. So she said, fine, then I'll keep my current pay, but I get to own the rights for the Elvira character and everything. And that's how she's been able to just be Elvira no matter what. And that's what actually made her, you know, super famous and rich, is that she was able to take that character away from the actual station and do it wherever she wanted.
Yeah, and she had like a long ass running comic too for Claypool Comics.
Oh,
that lasted a long, long time.
Yeah.
The only reason they canceled it was because that was the time Diamond says you had to have X amount of sales to even be in our catalog, and they were like at the border, and Claypool had to leave, and they would have kept on publishing it. It would have kept on going out.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so she's fun too. Like, I see her live, and I'm impressed with her attitude and the way she presents herself. Like,
well, the interview that I mean, she's a very, you could tell she's a very smart, savvy woman.
Yeah.
And you know, she did a lot of things the right way when she was younger to kind of set herself up, which is pretty cool to hear about.
Yeah, she got Walt on Comic Book Men to give blood, and he's the biggest sissy that I know, like when it comes to anything, like giving blood or getting on a plane.
Yeah, he won't fly.
Won't even get on a plane.
Too funny.
Well, let's go ahead and kick this off.
All right.
We'll start with Chris because he answered first.
And we missed him last episode.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I know, this is the first time I've been on in a while.
It's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome back.
Welcome back.
That's another good show.
That is a comic book that I'm looking to complete, by the way. Welcome Back, Carter, from DC Comics. They're not easy to find.
I didn't even know that it was by DC.
There's a few people I follow on Twitter that do... They watch stuff on MeTV together.
Yeah.
And live tweet about it or whatever.
You should see if you have it. You might be interested in some of it. Like, I was watching, I mean, that's a vector. I can talk shit all day and not get into topic. But I was watching Wonder Woman. I was watching Wonder Woman, and I was like, this is amazing. They were revitalizing Hitler. There was a bunch of guys in 70s suits with a scientist, and they were bringing back Hitler in the 70s. And I was like, what the hell? They had the swastika and everything. It was crazy. It's usually with the local stations, but
yeah,
it's a pretty cool station. I hope they keep it. Cause I'm a real, I don't like when they take themes away from stations, like when Cartoon Network is not cartoons anymore or MTV is not music TV. I'm like, I don't like when they do that and TV Land becomes something that it isn't.
Yeah. Think about any channel that's any cable channel anyhow, right? I mean, they've all kind of done that. Like AMC is the American Movie Channel. Well, it doesn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the History Channel shows all these reality shows. It's just whatever, because they have to stay afloat. So then they
can. Yeah, I understand why they do it, and it's because of ratings, and it's because they can sell commercials. It just drives me crazy that if you pigeonhole yourself into a topic and then you get out of it, then you shouldn't have pigeonholed yourself in the first place, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying something and then it doesn't work out, so
I do like the History Channel, watching those guys that travel in that truck and go look
at
antiques.
That American Pickers.
Yeah. I never watched it, but for some reason when my dad gets me hooked on things. And
those stupid shows are so addicting.
When I visit, like, you just with start my dad, watching one. He got me listening to country music. I would never listen to country music before. He got me watching, like, American Pickers, and I'll sit there and watch it. And then the other one that he got me watching is the Flea Market Flip or something like that, where they actually build something by going to flea market and picking out pieces. I'm like,
you know, it's American Pickers were just in the news.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No, what happened?
American pickers were just in the news because they found in one of their searches or whatever, they found Aerosmith's original van from one of their early tours.
Oh, wow.
It was in the backwoods in Massachusetts somewhere. So I guess that's an upcoming episode or something.
That show is fun, too, because they're not afraid to, like, at least the one guy is not afraid to crawl through junk.
Yeah.
Like, he'll go and he'll get, like, filthy just walking, you know, going through this pile of junk for a motorcycle part. You know what I mean? From a 1940s motorcycle. And it's I find that fascinating because I find the collecting mentality just fascinating and the way they go do stuff. And they just I know some of it's staged, but it's sure fun as hell. It's just a fun thing. Well, let's get back into what we were talking about or else I'll talk my ass off the whole day.
Congratulations on 100 episodes, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe it. A solo podcast for 100. That's a lot. It's a big achievement. I'll pass DC Noise pretty soon.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Rob, you should do a solo podcast, and for the first episode, you can say I did one episode of a solo podcast.
There you go.
That could be the title of it.
That's the only one. I'll only be able to do one. There's no
way. I didn't think I'd be able to do it when I started it because it's hard. It's hard because
you do a great job.
You don't have to bounce ideas off of anybody, so you have to be able to just stream it. And if you're hesitant, well, you've done this, Chris, but you're a little more prepared. You prepared your stuff in advance.
That's what I had to do. Yeah.
For me, I can't do that. I am just whatever's on my mind kind of guy. I can't plan it or it's not fun. I just can't do it. That's where I thrive. I can't plan. It has to be more spontaneous, and that's why we're already an hour into the episode and we haven't even got started yet.
Well, actually, we didn't really get started late.
Yeah, that's true.
We were talking about mosquitoes before you got in the call.
Really?
Yeah.
What conclusions?
No,
did
I was just
you
getting
reach?
Bit. I was just telling Chris that I've never gotten bit before in Colorado, and this year's really bad. I've never had to buy a can off. Never.
This hasn't been a bad year. Well, you know what? I shouldn't say that. I'm not spending a lot of time outside in the twilight hours, so.
Yeah. But let's what did you pick this week, Chris?
Well, I mean, I could tell you, but if one of you guys want to bring something else up to talk about before I do.
As soon as you say your first words, then we'll tangent from there.
Yeah. I can get the title out this time. Yeah. At least.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about My Greatest Adventure issue 81.
Ah, the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, so this is the second. So their debut is in issue 80. And so this is their second appearance, but you know.
Where did you get hold of this?
Just from my collection. I have like a 9.8. No.
So I figured.
From the library on Hoopla, because they just, DC recently published the first volume of the paperback version of the Silver Age of Doom Patrol.
Oh, okay.
So it showed up on there because they add the new trades that come out. So of course the people know probably the origin of the Doom Patrol, but real basically it's in the previous issues where they established that, and it's the thing that's different about them is that the heroes are all kind of people who aren't excited about their powers, that are in kind of a state of depression. And Niles Calder, who's confined to a wheelchair, recruits them and shows them how they can use their powers to help people. And you have Rita Farr, who's Elastic Girl. So she can grow or shrink her size. And then there's Robot Man, which actually is not called Robot Man yet. He goes by Automaton at first. And then you have Negative Man, who he can project a negative energy being, but as they like to remind you like several times per issue, at least early on, if the negative being is out from his body for longer than a minute, he'll die. And he collapses completely when his body collapses completely when the negative man is out of his body. But this has a pretty cool cover where Rita is in giant form and she's holding a torpedo over top of her head with a snorkel on her face and fighting a giant purple sea beast. And for like size comparison, you have in the foreground sailors helping Robot Man back up onto the front of a ship, so you can tell that she's huge. But the story is called Nightmare Maker, and is written by Arnold Drake, and at least according to him, Bob Haney. There's a little dispute there about that. And then the artist is who's the artist on these? I forget. Bruno Primani. That's right. So the whole kind of gimmick of this issue is that phenomena occurs and
phenomena
robot
phenomena
nice yeah so that stuff happens and everybody sees it except for Robot Man, which I'm just going to call him that because that's what we know him by now. It starts off that they have this mission to rescue a submarine that is trapped on the ocean floor offshore of New York City. Their propellers smash, and then there's some poisonous gas that's escaping from that engine room, and all the crew's unconscious. So it's pretty funny. They have this the largest oxygen tank and mask that's ever been created, and in normal size, you know, it's the mask is about, looks like it's probably like 3 feet tall or so. But it's because it's made for Rita in her large form. So they go out and she dives into the water and changes form and puts on her equipment and everything like that. And the other two active members of the Doom Patrol also head down with her in. They also have scuba gear on. So anyway, they're able to start assisting and helping out the submarine, but then the giant purple sea monster that is on the cover attacks. And so Rita starts battling with it, and also, as we see on the cover, that's kind of a pretty cool idea here. She actually grabs a torpedo and throws it at the monster, and as one of the sailors on a nearby ship says, "Now I've seen everything. A giant girl destroying a sea monster by hurling a torpedo at it." But the thing about this is that Robot Man, he never got caught sight of the monster. So it's at this point you just think, well, he might have been busy working on the submarine or replacing its propeller. But then they go on another mission in Northwest Canada, where a town's been. Excuse me a second. Where a town is been covered by a snowslide. So they head up there, and Rita's really making good use of her powers in this issue. She uses her fingernail to cut out a large piece of ice, and then uses that as a kind of shovel to dig out the town. But then this is where a snow beast attacks, this giant snow beast, and this time Cliff is standing right there and looking right where Negative Man is pointing, and he doesn't see anything at all. So Negative Man goes on the attack, afterwards the rest of the team is being thanked, and Negative Man and Robot Man, you know, they have a little bit of like an antagonistic or just kind of like a competitive relationship early on. And so Negative Man says, "No thanks to you, Tin Man. We'll settle our score later." So Cliff actually takes it out on Niles, and because Niles is the one who did the operation to put his brain in this robot body, he's claiming that whatever he did was defective because he's not able to see these things that everyone else can see. Meanwhile, there on the TV is this on this sort of talk man called Dr. Giannis, or Janus, is talking about his theories as to where these creatures are coming from. He's saying that it's there's been a door open between dimensions, and that's what they're coming from, and that that this is the like basically the precedes a full scale invasion. So soon after, there's a story in the news that there are these beings living inside a meteorite, but that's hit the Earth. But we find out then that Dr. Giannis is actually a former Nazi, and that he was worked in the propaganda bureau, and that he's created this invention that causes people to see things that aren't there. It infiltrates their brains and causes that. And the Doom Patrol is kind of starting to figure out that something's going on, investigating what's going on, because they realize that there was some discrepancy with the newspaper reporting. Niles finds an old picture of looks like Dr. Giannis receiving a medal from Hitler. So when they go what proves to be the final battle, they have this knowledge on their side. At least they think. Robot Man goes to prove that there's an illusion where this giant lizard-like creature, that he's just going to kind of walk through it and prove it wrong. But to his surprise, it actually manages to pick him up. And the what is actually happening is that Rita's mind is under control, and she doesn't realize that she's picking up Robot Man and starting to crush him. So he's got to protect himself, he's got to hit her in the hand, and she thinks that it's the beast biting her, so on and so forth, till Robot Man uses the fact that he's got a metal body to climb up an electrical tower and use a high voltage wire to disseminate the illusion, which manages to work, and then Negative Man catches Dr. Janice before he tries to run away, and all is revealed, and that's the end of the story. But I thought it was pretty neat. I know that the Doom Patrol Silver Age has a reputation for villains that are a little crazier than this one, but overall, like as an early adventure for the team, I think it did a good job of displaying their various powers, which people at this point are still getting familiar with and what they can do, and shows like you have some interpersonal dynamic with the team, you know, they're still hitting on kind of like these heroes being different than your average ones, with Robot Man thinking something's wrong with his brain and sort of regretting that Niles actually saved him, and that kind of thing, sort of struggling with their existence. So I think especially for the time it came out, the Doom Patrol is definitely ahead of its time, you know.
So. It inspired the X-Men.
Yes.
At least that's what people claim. But
yeah, there's a lot of rumors, and I don't know if we'll ever know exactly what went on there, but they certainly have some similarities.
And just fun fact, that Robot Man wasn't the first DC Robot Man. There was a Golden Age Robot Man, which had a very similar origin story, where they took the brain and put it in a robotic body. And he first appeared in Star Spangled Comics number 7. But the interesting, where I got to know him from, is All-Star Squadron. Because All-Star Squadron, he has a silver body. And that's where I know him from. But I was just curious, as you were talking about Robot Man, I was like, you know, I remember that Robot Man from All-Star Squadron, and I wonder if he was derived from... Because Roy Thomas was basically the James Robinson of his time, picking things that he loved out of the Golden Age and then throwing them in his Silver Age and Bronze Age comics. So.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Rob... I'm going to go ahead and go next, if that you're okay with it. Maybe he paused for the cause.
Yeah. Or...
No, I'm on mute. I'm sitting here talking to you guys and like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know. You're not listening to anything that I'm saying. Yeah, go
they're
ahead.
Saying he's being rude. Those guys are being rude.
Go for it, Mike.
I bought a lot of comics this week and last week. And the week before that. And I went on
the year before that.
You mean relatively, because you always buy a lot of comics every week.
Oh, well, let's say in addition to the current, I bought a lot of back issues.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which I've been buying a lot of lately. And one of the things that I've been trying to get is a full run. Bless you, Barb. Yeah, that's for Daryl, so he can hear you as he's listening.
He doesn't like when she sneezes in the background.
Yeah, he's like, they're trying to do the Lord's work. He's like, you're interrupting them. Yeah. But I want to complete a lot of the hero stuff that came out of Image from the main creators. And I did Savage Dragon, I already did Shadowhawk. I think I've completed all of Rob Liefeld stuff going into Maximum Press anyway. And now I want to do Todd McFarlane, which I think of all the creators, he's been the one that stuck the landing more than any of them. And what I mean by that is he stayed the course. Like, for the most part, there's always been a Spawn monthly. There hasn't been, like, a major hiatus with Spawn. It's the one thing that's sort of always been there. And the other thing...
What about Savage Dragon?
Oh, yeah, Eric Larcher, right?
Savage Dragon, he's taken... When he was the president, he's taken big hiatuses.
Oh, did he?
There were, like, six-month hiatuses. And the reason I know that is because I was buying it all monthly, and I was like, where the hell's Savage Dragon?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been a necessity because his dream was to do it himself, whereas McFarlane has put out more issues because he's, like, handed it over to other creators and stuff, or he just inks it or whatever.
It's you're true, but he has I don't think there's been... There's been Savage Dragon done by other people, but it's not been on the main title. It's always been Eric Larson.
It's a special thing. Yeah,
Eric Larson has always written and drawn it, and sometimes lettered and colored it. I mean, sometimes he's done the whole shebang. He does not always do the lettering and coloring anymore, but he always does the drawing and pencils, whereas early on, Todd McFarlane stopped penciling and gave to, like, Tony Daniel and Greg Capullo, and he started ink. He did a hell of a lot of inking, and even if you look in the Wizard days, he was nominated a lot for inking around that time frame because he was inking Capullo. The thing that's interesting is the Capullo ability to mimic Todd's style. I'm fascinated with it. Like, go ahead.
I was gonna say it depends too, because his inking can be really heavy inking. Like, if you watch some of the, like, he's posted videos of him inking, and
yeah,
like,
I see him on Facebook.
He can take something that doesn't look too much McFarlane and make it look pretty McFarlane, which not necessarily the case in Capullo, like that. And, you know, because obviously Capullo is really talented, but depending on what artist he's inking, like he goes pretty heavy on what he changes and stuff.
And to Todd McFarlane's credit, he has pretty much plotted the book the whole time. Like, he never loses creative control over his property. He writes it. He inked it for a long time, and maybe you know what would be really interesting now that you said that is to see what Capullo's pencils look like before he inked it, just to compare it side by side, because it looks really like you notice the difference is when McDaniel does his and McFarlane inks over him, it doesn't look the same. But when Capullo and McFarlane are doing it, it looks like McFarlane to me. Like, exactly.
Does, yeah.
And I actually think I prefer Capullo's artwork in Spawn to the current stuff that he's done in Batman and Metal. Mm-hmm. He's still a fantastic artist, don't get me wrong, but what I see in Spawn is just phenomenal in terms of creativity and panel layout and all that. But I'm working on completing Spawn, and I marathoned last weekend a bunch of them. I like read like a bunch of issues out of sequence because I only read the ones I was missing, so I like read 33 and then I went into the 50s. And the one thing that I will say is that he does a really good job of you being able to jump in as a single issue and understand what is happening in that issue. Not only did he get you into the story again by just having by telling his story, but at the beginning of inside of each cover, he would kind of summarize where you were, which I, you know, that was like the Marvel method that they're doing now, which I think is a great idea. I've always liked that, because if you're especially reading like me, where I didn't always collect Spawn and now I'm looking to fill it, I don't have to go back and read it all from the beginning. I could just jump right in and follow the storyline. But I fell in love with this storyline again. A matter of fact, I placed another MyComicShop.com order to get this, and then I bought another eBay one because there was one that was hard to find that was like $20, and I was trying to find it for cheaper. And I read, in a nutshell, I'm just going to talk about 58 briefly. And this is right after he saved Terry Fitzgerald from a brain tumor, which was pretty crazy because he didn't want to even save Terry because he felt betrayed by Terry because Terry married his wife. He thought that he set him up, but he loved his wife so much that he used his last remaining powers to save Terry, get rid of the tumor, and then get banished to hell. And then this is him coming back from hell. And he had met, like, in the early 20s, two little kids. I can't remember their names. One was Andy and one was, like, Eric or something like that. And they had an abusive father, and he, like, saved these kids from the abusive father. But later on, the older child killed the father because he had to. He was always protecting his little brother from getting beaten and such. And this kind of dealt with them as they traveled from a detention center. They escaped, and then they wanted to go visit Al Spawn again in the alleys, and they traveled all the way to New York to visit him. And they met up with a gangster that kind of used him to deliver drugs and stuff like that just so they can make ends meet and he can protect his brother. But they found Spawn. Spawn didn't even remember him when they first got there. And then he's like, "What are you doing here? You should be with your family." And he didn't realize what happened after the fact, I guess, that the father's dead now and they're in a detention center. And they kind of felt abandoned by Spawn. And the little boy wanted Spawn to be part of the family. He wanted to live with Spawn again in this alleyway of corpses. He basically sits on a throne of skulls in New York City, and there's a bunch of homeless that sort of protect him. Well, the gangster sets up this kid because he wants revenge on Spawn because he's stopping his drug trade and he's stopping things from moving and guns from being sold. And he follows the kid into the alleyway to see if he can kill Spawn. Takes three dudes with him, and that doesn't work out too well. You know, Spawn dissipates them. He anticipates them that they're there and kills two of them right off the bat, and then kind of haunts the third one. But the main villain gets a gunshot off and he shoots the little boy. But luckily it was just in the arm and they save him, and the kids decide to go back to that detention center where they're being held and turn themselves back in. But it's a really, the one thing that I can't figure out, and I haven't done a lot of research on Todd McFarlane, but if you look at his Spider-Man books and his Spawn books, he focuses a lot on child crimes, like crimes against children. And you'll see this in his Spider-Man run and his Spawn run. And the other thing he focuses a lot on is the homeless that are in New York City. And I wonder what spawns that. That's a pun.
But, did you do that on purpose?
No, that just happened to come out there. But, I had just recently read the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man omnibus, and I noticed a lot of similarities between the two. And the one thing I always keep forgetting is that he's a symbiote. The Spawn outfit is what gives him the powers. It's like the Venom. I don't even know how to pronounce it, and then everybody confuses me now because there's controversy about how to pronounce it. Symbionite?
Symbiote.
Symbiote. The similarities between that costume and Venom's costume. It's like a living
I never thought
entity.
Of it before, but you're very right.
And you'll see that in these issues. Is there's an old man called Cog that's sort of guiding Spawn and telling him if he uses his powers, he'll go to hell and stuff like that. And they tell him that his suit is driving it. And that's why you see Spawn a lot with, like, just big-ass guns. Because he doesn't want to use his powers to go closer to going to hell.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, this Spawn has been pretty phenomenal. And it's causing me to buy more comics.
Well, so, you definitely need some extra comics, Mike.
Yeah. I don't know why I stopped. I don't know why. I should never have stopped, but I did. I didn't stop with Savage Dragon. I don't know why I stopped with Spawn.
Huh. Yeah, I think I told... Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I thought you meant buying lots of comics. It's like, you didn't stop.
Well, I do stop. I've had areas where I try to cut back, and they don't work out well.
No, I was just going to say, that's one of my pastimes, is to, like, wait for your... wait for you to break your declarations.
Yeah. It's I should never break the declaration because I come back with a bigger vengeance and it gets If I just stay the course, it'll be cheaper.
Yeah. Just like don't try to hold back the stream.
Yeah, don't hold it, just let it happen.
Gonna come out harder.
Yeah, exactly. Then I'll come out of it and I'll say I have to buy 500 comics just to make up for it.
Oh, dear.
So go ahead, Rob.
All right. Well, I'm going to I read this morning, which caused me to be late. And then on top of it, I had audio issues. But I decided to read an annual from 1984. So I underestimated how long it would take me to read it.
Oh, that's annual. That
took a good half hour. So I was a little late in getting started here, but I'm
plus 84. You got a little more density to it.
That's what I'm saying.
I'll be honest with you.
Number of words per page.
These Spawn books are dense. They take about 20 minutes. I kid you not.
Really?
Yeah, because they'll have the reporters. You know those three reporters he always has. They have a ton of dialogue and reporting on things. Well, yeah, they're dense.
It was very dense, very wordy. There was a lot of background information. It's Iron Man Annual number 7 from 1984. It features Eric Johnston in his first appearance as the third Goliath. He had previously been Power Man and then the Smuggler. He becomes Atlas on the Thunderbolts down the road.
I know him from.
Yeah, that's how I first really knew him as a character, and then I, you know, saw some older stuff. But so this is his first time being Goliath, first time being able to change size. So like I said, I mean, there's a lot of exposition, a couple pages of very heavy not dialogue but writing going into his entire history. During this time frame in 1984, it was James Rhodes that was Iron Man. And the West Coast Avengers had just started. It actually looks like towards the back of the book, it's actually advertising West Coast Avengers number 2. I think it was the mini that it was referencing. It could be the regular one. I'm not sure. I have to go back and look. But so that's the time frame that we're talking about. So he's on the West Coast. Yeah, it is. It's advertising number 2 of the limited series. So West Coast just started. Hawkeye and Wonder Man actually guest star in this book in terms of fighting Goliath. The rest of the West Coast team with Mockingbird and Tiger are also just at the beginning. But hang on one second. hey, buddy, I got to finish doing this first, then you can show me, okay?
Can I have this flying saucer?
Well, we're going to have to check, okay? Okay. Zach found a new transformer that he wants.
You better buy it for him, or you know what he's going to say.
What?
Oh, wait. He hasn't seen Titans yet.
No, not yet. Everything he sees, he wants to buy.
Well, he sees you shopping for comics, that's why.
Oh, my God. So I'm reading my comic book, and they went grocery shopping, and I hear him going downstairs with my wife. He said, Daddy's collecting so many comic books, it's going to flood the house. He's not wrong. But so like, this particular...
Mommy, where are we going to sleep once Dad needs our beds for comic storage?
he tells me all the time that I have too many.
Oh.
And he's one to talk because, like I said, every single toy he sees, he wants to buy and collect them. So
yeah.
He has the collecting bug like I do. He just doesn't appreciate my collection quite yet.
He just knows that it's taking up space that he could use.
It's probably what it is. He's being very logical over it.
This is not...
Zachary, I have to keep talking on this phone.
This is not going to be fast.
What?
You know what I'm looking at transform stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Can they have this transforms into a Death Star?
Oh
wow!
God.
I like that idea.
The Death Star. You know, Mike on the phone thinks that that's a great idea, Zach.
That's fantastic.
So we'll have to look for that. Okay. He's definitely going to get it.
Would he settle for a Lego set?
The like Death Star?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll start a GoFundMe. All right, so this particular issue, like I said, right at the beginning of the West Coast Avengers, I'm not sure how far into Rhodey's run in Iron Man it is, but Tony has started a new company already and is sober again, so it's a little farther in. As a matter of fact, they're arguing, they're kind of at odds with each other because on one hand, Rhodey knows that... that Tony was Iron Man. He's the original Iron Man. He's the one that created all of these armors and so forth. And now he's probably in a position where he'd be able to become Iron Man again. But Rhodey is really enjoying being Iron Man, being a hero. In terms of Tony Stark's side, you know, he was in a bad spot and Rhodey helped him out. So he's not in a position really that he can ask for the armor back, even though you can tell he wants to get back into it. When he finds out, actually, in this issue that Iron Man has joined the West Coast Avengers, and he's not quite sure what to think about that. And when they meet up real quickly, they argue like almost immediately, and Rhodey flies off. As I mentioned before, with Eric Johnston, it gives like his whole back history. He ends up getting contacted by a strange scientist who wants to offers to help him out because apparently Eric's been depowered. And it goes into the whole back history on how he was originally a villain called Power Man. He had gotten his powers from Baron Zemo. And he goes to this place, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. I've heard the name before, and I know I've seen him, but it's Carl Malus. Dr. Carl Malus, he's a scientist who can who specializes in this type of stuff. So he offers to give him his powers back, and he also goes into detail on how he managed to get a hold of some Pym particles, and said that he's got a formula to inject those as well. So he goes ahead and he says, okay, if you work for me for 6 months. Then we'll go ahead and get you your powers back and also get you these Pym particles so you're going to be able to grow and shrink. And sure enough, it works. He gets a redesigned costume, and then he trashes Carl Malus's place and basically says, you know, I've been a pawn all these years. Now I've got the power. There's no way I'm working for you. And he storms off and starts just destroying the street and the buildings nearby until he gets the attention of Iron Man, as Iron Man was storming off from Tony Stark. So they battle, and Goliath actually knocks him like hundreds and hundreds of feet away, and Goliath walks away, and Iron Man was unconscious, but he comes to, and the next day he's back at the West Coast headquarters doing some investigation on Eric Johnson, who's now calling himself Goliath. At that point, Hawkeye and Wonder Man come into the headquarters, and the three of them agree to team up. Obviously, Rhodey has a problem with Goliath at this point, and Hawkeye used to be called Goliath when he was the shape changer in, or not shape changer, but size changer in the Avengers. So he's kind of got a stake in it. And Wonder Man actually went through the same process that Eric Johnston did when he became Power Man. So the three of them kind of have like a personal stake in this as well. So they start investigating. They get a detector that can detect that type of energy. They manage to track him down at a motel. And through some teamwork, they're actually finally able to beat him. Iron Man uses a lot of sonic powers against him with his armor, just causing him to be disoriented. And it actually, even though the other two have earplugs, it's almost unbearable for them, even though Hawkeye is partially deaf. But they managed to actually knock him out through this process, and through Iron Man and Wonder Man keep on joint punching him together, and he falls to the ground, and they manage to take him away. And then it just ends quickly with a reporter, and it shows far away Carl Malice just kind of shaking his head in disgust that Goliath didn't work with him, because he could have been great, and now he's just another washed up supervillain. This was a really enjoyable issue. It's like I never had owned this. I missed this particular annual back in when it was coming out, and I recently picked it up at the last local hotel con a few months ago now, and it was pretty interesting. It was like right when I first started buying Iron Man comic books. A lot. Actually, when I first started buying them, that it was right when Rhodey was becoming Iron Man, and so it was interesting to get back into this one.
Cool. I'm curious, when you tape there, is it a dual tape or is it a single tape?
What's that?
Your comic book. I heard you taping or untaping.
Oh. Well,
is it two pieces of tape or is it one piece of tape?
I just do one piece of tape.
In the center?
How about you? That,
I do one piece because the two pieces are dangerous.
Oh, I can't do two pieces. Come on now.
No, two pieces are nice so the flaps never go up.
Yep, because I get every
never,
once in a while, even
never
with Mylar,
they
I
never
get it,
crease
like,
upward. They never crease upward, which is nice to do, but two pieces of tape is very dangerous for getting a book in and out of it.
Well, you'd have to take the tape right off if you want to be really careful, and I don't have the time for that. Yeah.
One piece is good enough. You don't have to. You just fold it back and then pull it out.
I'm with you, Mike. I just do the one. It's good enough, especially with the Mylar. It usually doesn't – I mean, every once in a while, if I, you know, am not careful, you know, I might get that, like you said, the edge flapped the other way, and – you know, with a Mylar, it's almost like a crease then. But
yeah.
But yeah, it was I only do one. This was a good issue. A while back, I was trying to obtain like all the Iron Mans from like 120 and up, and I had done that a while ago, but I had still had a few annuals I was missing. So I had picked up like 5, 6, and 7, I think.
Yeah. I have Iron Man continuous, like, to like issue 43, and then I have some sporadic, and then I pick up again with 73 and on, but I'm missing a handful of them.
And I've got 120 and up only, and then very few after that, maybe another 20 issues total down to number 24 as my lowest number. But it's one that I would consider, once I get done all with all of Cap, I might go and try to get the full run of Iron Man because it's actually something I could probably afford. Being
it's attainable if you don't go for Tales of Suspense.
Exactly, because it's not even close to his first appearance. So it's
Iron Man number one is sort of an awkward read because it continues right out of Tales of Suspense, and it doesn't like set up what just happened. It's a weird read.
It's not even a number one, is it? Continue the numbering.
Iron Man number one is legit.
It was because it was Captain America that took the numbering.
But my LCS actually just got a copy a couple weeks ago of Iron Man number one. They're asking like 400, which probably I could get like 300. They would probably sell it to me for like 300 or 320 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not in a position where I want to spend that much right now for $1.
You can do it later when you have it. When you're rich.
Yeah, when I win the lottery.
Yeah.
I have a question. Is your doggy sad?
Did you hear?
Yeah.
She came in out of nowhere just whining a little bit. I pet her, and then she kind of stopped whining, and then she walked back out of the room.
Oh, okay. How is she doing?
Oh, well, you know, she's all right. I don't know if you saw my post yesterday, but she totally chewed the crap out of one of Allie's sneakers. So we had to run out last minute to the shoe store and get her some new sneakers. What else did she eat? She basically, if you leave anything out that looks like something she'd want to chew, she will definitely chew it. So she's not out of that phase. But
there was one time that we had like really unchewable things. We had like controllers for the TV and the ceiling fan and binoculars and metal binoculars, and Scooter chewed through everything. We came into the house, the ceiling fan was on high, the TV was on. And we're like, what the hell's going on? And then there was a pair of binoculars destroyed on the floor.
I mean, she's just doing what, you know, she's still young. She's like 8 months old. So, I mean, she loves, I don't know that she'll ever get out of the chewing phase, to be honest.
They will if you give them toys, and that's a puppy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because she has lots of chew toys too, but
they teeth.
She likes looking for other things.
Yeah, they teeth like kids. Like they need to chew.
Yeah,
man,
that's
we
crazy.
Got gophers and they're killing my lawn.
You got holes all over the place.
Yeah, and we had a snake that ate one of the gophers.
Seriously,
snake? Well, he got trapped. Barb saved the snake. He got trapped or whatever, and it regurgitated the gopher. And she was just cleaning it and helping the snake out. And we're like, go back and kill these gophers, man.
Oh, my God.
It's a garter snake, but it was a big-ass garter snake, man.
Holy
I think
smokes.
that's why I dram of snakes last night.
Well, how did it kill a gopher?
It swallowed it, or it.
Holy
yeah, have you ever seen pictures of snakes when they swallow something like really
huge?
Yeah,
but not like... but not a garter. Like
no,
a
this was a baby gopher. Like when they're tiny like mice.
I'm picturing a full size gopher.
No, it's not like a full size gopher. These gophers are no bigger than a large mouse.
This makes more sense.
They have these. You'll see them. They're cute as hell because they have these cute eyes and then these like buck teeth. But they're just an annoying creature because you'll have these mounds in your yard.
I got this friend of mine, Carl Spackler. If you want, I can give him a call and have him come over. He kills gophers for a living.
We tried that the humane way. We I'm hoping that the snakes kill them. Like we're hoping the snake population increases and just kills the gophers.
And what, Harley doesn't want anything to do with them?
Harley Scooter used to kill the gophers. That's why we had no problem. He'd dig, and then he'd get them in his mouth and throw them against the wall really hard.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And then they were dead.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, so he was a gopher killer, and we didn't have a gopher problem with Scooter because he would dig, kill it, and then...
Harley's like the laziest dog ever.
Harley will go after nothing except maybe a cat. That's about it. There could be like five rabbits in the yard. She doesn't give a shit. I don't know. It's weird.
Harley believes in live and let live.
Yeah. She just hangs out there with the birds, and there's like birds over her. She doesn't care.
Yeah. They're not bothering her.
She's very not a typical dog as far as chasing other things. For some reason, cats though. she'll go after a cat. And I don't know why. I don't know why she chooses one animal over another. It perplexes me.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like she just really, cats just really piss her off.
I guess.
For whatever reason.
Oh, and there is one type of bird that she'll go after, and it's just one type. It's a robin.
What?
She does not like robins in the yard picking for worms. Oh, I don't know why that is.
She's like, come over here with that filthy mouth, fuck Batman. I can't believe you said that.
That's right.
Batman. We wanted to get a cat, but now I don't know if we're going to be able to because this dog's insane.
Yeah,
and I told Stacy, I'm like, if we get one and it doesn't work out, then we're going to have to end up giving the cat to somebody else or giving the cat away, because we can't have like the animals like trying to, or for the dog trying to kill the cat and constantly having to worry about keeping them separated. You know what I mean?
Chris has them coexisting, so that's
We used to as kids. I had that too, but I just don't know how this particular dog is going to. She just is very. She gets very wild and riled up, and when she's riled up, she even if she doesn't want to hurt the cat, she might do it by accident.
Yeah, when we first met Harley, they introduced her and said she's friendly to all animals. But they took her inside. She was like with a bunch of other pit bulls and other dogs, and there was a cat. And one of the first things she did was chase it upstairs. So, you know, and the first time we got it, we said, "Huh, that's interesting."
I don't even know how we could even test that, even you know, ahead of time either. But without actually getting one and slowly introducing it, I don't know.
Yeah, well, something. Unless you had somebody. You know, that's willing to bring the cat over.
Yeah, I know. So we're gonna give it some time. Want her to kind of calm down a little bit, not be so hyper and
stuff.
Yeah,
one of your friends. Are you willing to sacrifice your cat? Just bring it over for a couple hours.
Well, right. I mean, I don't want to tell. I'm not gonna. It's like I'm gonna tell my friends that the cat's in any danger. I don't want them to know ahead of time.
Well, I think some of the adoption places. And I don't know all of them, but some of them will let you do stuff like that. Because they already have a foster home, and it's like, okay, you're just seeing how your animal coexists with another animal, and sometimes they'll let you borrow it for a couple of days. And if it doesn't work out, the foster family just takes it back, you know?
Yeah, I don't need to have that type of stress in the house where they're...
And then you don't have to worry because foster families take care of them. They're not going to put them to sleep or anything, you know.
Yeah, I like that idea. We'll have to do some research on that when we get ready for it.
PetSmart, maybe they adopts cats. I don't know what their policy is, but
yeah,
you can check there.
Yeah, woof, woof. We'll probably start looking into it by the end of
cats
the year.
Cats are tough,
I'd say,
though. They
she's
can
a little quieter.
Most of the people I know that have both, the cat will definitely not let the dog know if.
And see, but that's okay because, like, what's the worst that's going to happen if the cat's the one that's aggressive, right? I mean, they'll just stay away from each other. But if the dog's the aggressive one, then you might have a dead cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you do have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to be very, like, patient, gradual with introducing them.
Yes. for sure.
You have to do that with other dogs too, though. Like,
yeah,
if you get two female dogs, one of them's going to want to be an alpha, and one of them might want to be an alpha too.
And you know what's so funny is that this particular dog, she absolutely loves any other person or any other dog. She loves them. But smaller animals, she goes nuts when there's rabbits in the neighbor's yards and stuff. So I just don't know with a smaller animal how she'll react. Dogs, I'm not worried. I wouldn't be worried about it at all, but I don't want a second dog, so.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, like, for them to learn. Like, Mabel, she was initially, like, wanted to go after Dusty, like, but she learned that, you know, that, I don't know, and she still, like, if she sees a cat outside, she still, like, wants to go after it, but for whatever reason, she learned, no, this is...
Well, they understand it's part of the family. I mean, just the way that you act around the cat and stuff, I think so, helps a lot, too.
Because she'll still, like, she's killed one rabbit and two squirrels in the backyard so far.
Holy smokes.
So she's definitely got the hunting instinct.
That's what my old cat used to do, is kill rabbits and birds.
Our cat kills mice. We let him, like, go into the garage when it's closed, and he hangs out there, like, when it's raining, and because he knows the mice are going to come in. And he's, like, 15 years old, and he still kills mice occasionally.
Wow.
But, we still keep them separate when we leave the house. When we're not around, just to be on the safe side.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense. We would, we'd be doing... Right now, we still... We create latte when we're not home, but obviously that's out of necessity. I have no idea what the house would look like if we didn't do that.
Yeah.
We could continue to do that, and it's not something that she dislikes. She likes her crate, so.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the cat can just like roam. Sit outside the crate and be like,
stick its tongue out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got another thing to cover, Chris?
I read Nexus number one.
You did?
I've been wanting to read this series for a while, and I think I read it once before and almost talked about it, and then for some reason I didn't. But I reread it. The first three, so there were three issues published by Capital Comics.
Yeah.
And then First Comics took over, and the Capital Comics issues are black and white.
Which one is that what you read?
The very, very first Nexus issue, the Capital Comics number one. So this is black and white, written by Mike Barron, and with art by Steve Rude. It takes place in the year 2481. There's a man beneath the surface of a moon called Ilum, suspended in this like chemical bath, dreaming of another time. And he's dreaming of 20 years prior on Earth, and a Paraguayan state security police. It's like a really bad prison. And the director is a Colonel Hector Gonzalez y Vega. he's a cruel director, that punishes this man, Fernando, for trying to start a union amongst the textile workers. So he, like, puts his cigar out on the guy's eye. Sleeper goes back to current time for the comic, and the sleeper wakes. Comes out and this is Nexus. He opens the door dramatically and says, get the cruiser ready. See that my costume is laid out and pressed.
Oh,
and
my.
There's these alien creatures that are, they're asking him, like, when will you share your dreams with us? And he tells them, my dreams are mine alone. So later he appears in his costume. He kind of like walks down. It's almost like a wrestling entrance or something. Cause he's walking down this path with humans and aliens on either side, like their fists raised, like to praise him and stuff. So we find out that in the 20 years that have passed, Gonzalez y Vega has fled Paraguay and he's now living on a planet called Constanti now. And he's living a different life under a different name. He's calling himself Hector Garcia now, and he's at like this dinner that's kind of being held in his honor at this expensive hotel, and people are like are toasting him for his leadership and stuff when the waiter comes up and says he presents a gift of a bottle of Chablis, and Hector says, well, who sent it? He said the person who sent it wants to be anonymous, but they were very specific about the vintage of the wine, that it come from Paraguayan grapes, and that its vintage be 2461. So Hector he chokes on his on the wine, and he realizes the significance of that. And this is when Nexus brings his attack. There's a bit of a battle, but the resistance is not very strong, and there's like almost a full page splash. There's a small panel in the top corner, but it's Nexus standing there pointing at the colonel, he's got like an energy blast around his other hand. Colonel Gonzalez y Vega, I have come for you, he says. his new wife, the colonel's new wife, runs out. No, stop, it's a terrible mistake. And Nexus fires his energy blast, and it's kind of funny. The blast goes, like, you can apparently it has complete control over its direction, because it fires forward and then goes up over top of the wife, back down, and then forward again to hit the colonel and could kill him.
It's like Darkseid's Omega Beams or something that can just change directions.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. good comparison. So his wife is crying. He didn't know evil. He was a good man, and Nexus doesn't bother to. He says, I could convince you otherwise, but it would serve no purpose. So he walks out, and like outside the corridor of the room where he's just killed the colonel, there's just like at least 40 or 50 soldiers waiting, like hiding on either side of the door, and they just open fire, and it's having no effect. And then all of a sudden, this short guy in a tuxedo comes running out. Hold it, hold it. And everybody sees fires, and he's, I'm the maitre d', you've done my hotel a great deal of damage, not just to the physical structure. Nexus says he's going to pay for it, but the guy presses him on why he thinks he can just do what he wants to do and be judge, jury, and executioner. And Nexus replies that what he's doing has nothing to do with vengeance. And he says he acts in self-defense. And it's not really clear what that might mean. Because it certainly seems like he is acting in vengeance. But so then the second chapter of the story opens with a woman named Sundra Peel showing up. Basically, the moon Ilum is the whole moon is Nexus's base. And she shows up outside in the space outside the moon and states, you know, Nexus doesn't want to have anything to do with visitors and people, you know, no one's welcome there. But she tells him that she only has 14 hours of oxygen left. And so if he refuses her landing and replenishing, he's basically killing her. And he lets her, so he lets her land, but he knows that she pretty much did that on purpose, so he didn't have a choice. And she explains that she is a reporter and that people have a right to know why he does the things that he does. And but of course, he's not interested in being interviewed. So, you know, he instructs his followers to make sure she leaves at the quickest possible time, as you know, as soon as she's replenished her supplies and stuff like that. So she asks if she can talk to some of his guests, and he says, they're not guests. Just stay out of my way. So she does end up talking to some of the guests and talks to like an alien that explains to her that, you know, used to work in this factory, and then there was it's very like Nazi Germany. Like, there's this racial purity party that takes over, and they make inferior races wear special markings. And he didn't complain when they started rounding up the creatures that only had seven digits on their hands. He is an eight-digit person. You know, he has eight digits, and that's what you needed to work in the factory. Then they took the factory and they changed its purpose, and that they would not employ workers of that race anymore at any time. And so that he finally began to resist, and because he resisted, he was thrown in jail. And eventually, the story goes on, but eventually it's Nexus that saves these aliens and takes down this racist regime. And the followers, the survivors of his race asked Nexus to take them with him. He agrees, because if he hadn't agreed, then they would basically be killed. So he took as many that he possibly could on his ship and brought them back to Ilum. And that's basically where, like, all of these various aliens that are there, when Nexus says that they're not his guests, he's referring to the fact that basically everybody there is a refugee or something like that. So some days pass, and there is another ship that appears outside of Ilum. And this ship starts communicating with Nexus and tells him, you know, I have a proposition. What if I can stop the dreams that you're having? And so he is intrigued, despite himself, and he allows this these people to land, and it's three soldiers, the one of the soldiers says that Suta LeBurk is honored that you will hear his humble proposal. That's the end of chapter two. So basically, what these men want is that they want Nexus to kill somebody. It's an alien named Zephyr Mird. He's the dictator of a place called the Hassian Republics, and he's basically known as a really bad person, a slaver, an enslaver. He's any like government that has any civilization that has rights and you know, has condemned him. And Nexus has heard of that guy. He's one of the aliens on his ship, Giz, that is you know, pretty, the Nexus knows pretty well, and several others are start asking for Nexus to agree and kill this guy. He shuts him down for, you know, being like acting like it's a Roman Colosseum, shouting for death. So Nexus asks for more details on how they'll get rid of his dreams, and they talk about this operation that they have, that they have the ability to do. And eventually, Nexus decides to accept the offer, and that is where the issue ends. That he's going to go and kill this horrible being. But yeah, I mean, it was really interesting. I mean, Nexus is a pretty long series, and it's intriguing to find, like, to, you know, where it might go next. It has this interesting tone that it manages to be mostly serious, but then has this slight kind of campy feel to it at times, where, like, some of, especially early on, when Nexus is kind of like first being introduced, like some of the stances and poses that he takes, like that Steve Rude draws him in, are kind of like bombastic, and, you know, so there's almost a slight, like, and with Mike Baron, his writing is kind of that way too. There's this kind of sarcastic humor to it a little bit. But it's also very, like, dealing with some very serious subjects and stuff. So it's a kind of a tough tone to pull off, but I feel like they pull off a pretty pretty intriguing tone with the issue. So I know it's really, like, really well known, especially, like, people who were collecting in the 80s, and you know, it's one of the sort of better known independent comics. So
yeah, I've never read this far back. I think just some of those first comics are the ones that I've read, some lower issues for that.
Okay. Do you remember what your experience was kind of just jumping in, or?
It wasn't, honestly, it wasn't the best experience. It was okay. I think I really liked the idea of it. Like, not the idea, but the costume definitely is something that appeals to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, let me check this out and stuff. And I just got some, like, random issues back, like, years ago. Like, I'm actually looking now to see what I had. And it was like issue 25, issue 29, you know what I mean? Just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then at Dave and Adams, I did see some a little bit older ones, and I picked up 8 through 11 and I read those, but they were okay, but I wasn't the biggest fan. I wonder if I'd change my mind at all if I started from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say with only having read the first issue, but I get this. It does sort of feel, I wouldn't be surprised if it's very continuity heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had no idea. Even with, like, issue 8, I had no idea what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
Covers, yeah, are beautiful.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And that's,
I've never
another
read,
thing.
Read too much Nexus. I think there was a crossover I read once, Nexus and something. I think it's Aliens, or I don't know what it was. Dark Horse did one. But I haven't read much Nexus. I've always been more of a Grimjack or Scout or in that realm. Even though I like Steve Rude's art is phenomenal.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know what it looks yeah. like in the book itself, but, like, when he does, like, a commission on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, it looks just amazing, like, mind-blowingly awesome. I think he had a cover on the Action Comics 1000 too that was pretty sweet.
He did. Yeah, I think he did the 30s or the 40s or something like that. It was a lower one.
Yeah. He's pretty amazing. He's a tall guy.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen him at a convention, yeah. Well, what I'm going to go with now is another run I just completed recently. It's The Peacemaker, or The Comedian. No. Number one, which I have never read before. I think I owned it, though, in terms of a modern comic. Modern comics took over reprinting Charlton Comics. Man, it must have been in the 80s. And maybe it was it was probably the late 80s. And they were available at Kmart, and that's the only reason I bought Modern Comics. They didn't have DC Comics. They didn't have Marvel Comics. They had Modern Comics. And I own the Charlton and the Modern Comic. And there really is not a lot of substance on this character. His name is Christopher Smith. And his thing is he's a man who loves peace so much that he's willing to fight for it. And he tends to travel to controversial areas that may be world, like something's going to be nuked or something like that. And then he goes and investigates to see if it's real. And then if it's real or not, he takes them out. And what this had is three stories. Peacemaker number one had two Peacemaker stories in it. I guess there were like 8 pages each, maybe 10 pages each, somewhere in between there. Had two Peacemaker stories and one Fight in Five. And the Peacemaker's first appearance is in a Fight in Five comic book. And then they launched him into his own series. I do not own the first appearance of Peacemaker, but I'm in negotiations, and I'm trying to get that appearance.
I was going to say, maybe that's something you should work on today.
Yeah, I'm working on it. And hopefully I'll have that Fight in Five issue and have the Peacemaker. One of the things that he was known for is having this funky helmet. Like, what does he have this helmet for?
Yeah, that's a big helmet.
It's a big-ass helmet. And if you get to Peacemaker number 5, they actually change the direction of the helmet. It's more like a Mohawk-looking helmet instead of around his head. So the first story is about how close the countries are in getting into people's fishing waters. And there's mysterious fishing boats that are missing and stuff like that. So you have like the Russians, the Japanese, and America losing ships in this particular area of the sea. And the research boat is going out. And this character, what is his name again? Christopher Smith, goes on that sub as a funder of the research and finds out that there's this sub underwater that is sinking these ships. And he gets in his costume, he changes in a sub, in a boat, and then goes underwater, gets onto this mysterious sub and finds this guy called the Commodore. And he's kind of destroying these fishing boats and he wants to take over the world, and Peacemaker pretty much takes him out pretty doggone fast after a long ass speech. It's like, you know, you have your villain speech and then the guy didn't exist much longer than his speech. He ended up dead. And then the second story is Peacemaker going to another country near Russia, and he's going there as he meets an ambassador from the Balkan nation, and he's a real pompous asshole. And he finds out that this guy is building nuclear weapons in that area and he's going to use them. And essentially he takes him out. And then later on, when he's in his other persona, the guy pretends he's innocent, but we know he's guilty. So this one had nuclear capability. Well, now they don't have nuclear capability. He took him out, and then the ambassador there was apologizing to him later in his other alias. And then the third story is another another evil dictator from the Balkan Islands who's going to nuke the entire world. Whoa, get those Transformers.
Everyone can hear you screaming, running into the bathroom.
This is the, hey, I do that all the time. If you got to go, you got to go.
They said, if you got to go, you got to go.
The next story is the Fightin' Five issue, and there's an evil dictator, and he's going to nuke the world. And the Fightin' Five end up taking him out, except there's a sacrifice because they're now the Fightin' Four. They lose a member. So they're very, like, non-substance, and everyone had, like, a nuclear threat of some sort, like world-ending. The interesting thing I found is a lot of people make fun of the Peacemaker's helmet, but in this particular case, in one of the stories, it actually saved his life because he went down an air shaft and they essentially blew it up, and he used his rocket jets and then his helmet to smash into the wall. And I think if he did it with his normal head, because he's human, he would have killed himself.
Very interesting.
I guess you could kind of see from the phrase how he could be like the comedian, how he's used in The Watchmen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just elements of his being. That he's willing to do some violent-ass stuff for peace.
Very cool.
He's pretty crazy in Vigilante.
Yeah, he appeared in Vigilante. He appeared in Checkmate. He had a 4-issue miniseries, all of them which I own. This was the only thing left of his appearances besides the Fightin' Five that I was missing. Because he hasn't had a hell of a lot of them.
No.
You want to do another book, Rob?
The only thing I have left is a movie I watched the other night. Let me know, both of you, if you've seen this before. It's called The Howling. It's from 1981.
I have seen it, but, man, it was in 1981, so I don't remember that too much.
Chris, have you seen this before or no?
You know, I think it was like... No, I was on my list to watch when I watched some other werewolf stuff, but I don't think I ever got around to it. Now I'm looking at it.
I won't spoil the endings. I'll just say, just in general, what the synopsis is. So obviously, you know that it's a werewolf movie. There's a reporter, a TV reporter, that as you start the movie, it's already like in the middle of this, that this TV reporter is being stalked by a serial killer, and they have arranged for her to kind of be bait to try to finally catch this guy. So she's agreed to meet him in one of like an adult video shop where they have like the movies in the back.
What?
So, wait, yeah.
Why are they going to meet there?
This is just where he said he wanted to meet with her. And
is
so
this,
they're
Is this Guy to... Gardner or what?
Guy Gardner?
Is this Guy Gardner taking ice to this first date?
Travis Bickle?
Yeah,
Travis Bickle. That's more like that's it. Right. Is. Taxi driver.
Yeah.
She's taking her to an adult film place.
Well, this is where they're meeting, okay?
So yeah, but that's a weird place to meet. You act like it's a normal thing.
Well, I'm not acting like it's a normal thing. This is where the serial killer said that he wanted to meet with this lady.
So where was your first date with your wife?
we're not talking about that right now.
Oh, okay. It's perfectly normal.
Yeah. So she's sitting there waiting, right? And this guy and the guy comes in behind her, and you know, she starts
you can't really see anything. It's very dark, and you see that it appears like he's got like just he looks weird, and he's got like a lot of hair on the top of his head and stuff. And she starts screaming, and the police had lost contact with her. She had had like a microphone that stopped working, so they finally just in time find where she is, and they shoot and kill this serial killer. His name's Eddie Quist, and she ends up not being able to remember anything of what occurred at that at the location. So there was a psychotherapist that was on the TV channel's news at one point. He was actually promoting a book and talking about different stuff. And so she goes to see him, and he's played. I should give you some information first. It's directed by Joe Dante. It stars Dee Wallace is the TV reporter. Patrick McNee is the psychotherapist, and I haven't really heard of a lot of the other actors before. Patrick McNee, I think, was in The Prisoner, if I'm correct. And he also was in A View to a Kill, the James Bond movie. But anyhow, so she sees him, and what he says is he decides that she basically needs some relaxation. It has to get her mind off of this as part of the treatment, and then maybe he can treat her further. And he has a secluded resort called The Colony that he sends her and her husband goes to as well. And when they get there, The Colony has a lot of like weird people. Like one is this woman, she almost dresses up like a female wizard or something like that. But she's very like seductive, and she keeps hitting on her the TV reporter's husband, and it's just very strange. There's an old guy that like tries to kill himself there. On they're at the beach when they get there in the evening and stuff. And some of the people are pretty nice, but it's very strange. And of course, sure enough, some werewolves start appearing, and her husband actually gets scratched and bit, and as I'm sure you guys can guess, you know, he turns into a werewolf. And basically by the end, one of the TV producers, his wife had gone to see the television reporter, see how she was doing, because she seemed not doing well. And when that woman goes missing, he goes down there and basically ends up saving the television reporter just in the nick of time, and she's totally surrounded by werewolves, and they manage to burn down the barn that they're all in. And then there is kind of like, I wouldn't say a twist ending, but a surprise ending that I won't reveal here. But it was pretty good. I did find myself, I was a little tired last night, so I found myself just keep on looking at my phone and like checking, like looking up things and stuff. So I wasn't paying as much attention as kind of wish I did. Mike, you won't be surprised to know that I gave it a 6 out of 10. But I really think if I sat down and paid a little bit more attention, the ending really did. I kind of felt it was like kind of very typical throughout most of the movie, but then towards the end, it really started to gain my interest, and especially with the very end. Kind of made it for me. So I could see watching it again and paying a little bit more attention, and I might give it like a 7 out of 10. So it was, I definitely recommend watching it either for the first time or watching it again.
American Werewolf in London?
Yeah, I recently saw that within the past year.
Isn't there a scene in that one too, like where an adult snuff film, like,
I don't think so. I think you're thinking of this.
There's something with the theater where he goes to the theater and there's a dead corpse in back of him.
I don't remember.
I thought it was a snuff film.
Then both of those movies came out around the same, like within a couple of years of each other, I believe. Actually, look, I'm looking it up right now. They came out the very same year, 1981. So
I had not seen either one of those prior. So if you remember a couple of years ago, I got that book with like the 100 horror movies you need to see before you die. So they're both on there. So I watched American Werewolf for the first time going on a year ago, probably a little less than a year. And
what did you rate that one out of curiosity? Because I remember liking American Werewolf more than I did The Howling.
The Howling?
Yeah.
American Werewolf, I gave 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
So right now it's a little bit more, but I could see myself bumping up Howling a little if I had paid a little bit more attention. I think I didn't appreciate it as much. I was a little bit – if I don't pick up my phone and start, like, looking and, like, actively, like, doing stuff, I was a little bit tired. I knew I was going to start falling asleep, and I didn't want that to happen. But at the same time, it was drawing my attention away from the movie. So probably need to watch it when I'm a little bit more refreshed. But it was cool. I definitely – Chris, I recommend checking it out. I don't think it's free right now. It is free on Shudder, but that's that $4.99 subscription. I don't think it's free for Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
In general,
I do like Joe Dante.
Mm-hmm. Did he do Gremlins?
Yeah, he did Gremlins, and then I've seen the two movies he did. This is pretty early on for him, The Howling, but I've seen the two movies he did prior to this, Piranha and Rock and Roll High School.
Oh,
he also did Inner Space, and he did The Burbs, which I talked about on this podcast before.
Yeah, we watched it together. That's the first time I watched it.
Yeah, we both talked about it.
That's cool. Yeah, and Dee Wallace was very good. I don't know where this falls in for her in terms of like her film history, but. You know, obviously she was in a lot of those 80s movies, you know, whether it was E.T. or wasn't she in Cujo?
Like Critters. I mean, she's still working, so her filmography is like
long,
really long.
Yeah. I'm going back to like 81. So, okay. So 81 is The Howling. E.T. was the year after. I don't know where Cujo fell, if she wasn't. It looks like she did a lot of TV. Oh, yeah, she was in The Hills Have Eyes. I forgot about that. That was in 77.
The original?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I just read or watched that for the first time in the past year,
too. The original or the new one?
The original, 77.
The new one is pretty brutal. Like, I rewatched that one twice. It's, oh, man, it's... It's not bad. It's just more violent. It's more, a little more twisted, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in everything in the 80s. Holy smokes. And even into the 90s.
Even into, like, I mean, seriously, like, her filmography is, like, hundreds of things. She's still in stuff today. Like, in 2018, she was in, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things.
I'm glad that she's keeping busy.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it looks like Cujo was 83.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was in 10 with Bo Derek and Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore.
She's still doing horror, it looks like. I see a couple from last year and the Ouija one from this year. Ouija House.
Man from Atlantis.
No, me neither.
Oh, The Man from Atlantis. I have that on DVD. I gotta go watch
it. Elizabeth Brooks, the actress that played the villain woman in it.
In which one?
Howling.
Uh-huh.
She looks like she died. She was only 46 when she died.
Yikes.
In 97. From cancer.
Well,
just to bring things down a bit.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
But it looked like she was on a bunch of stuff like 70s and 80s shows, you know, where they were obviously, you know, they have their guest actress, Kolchak, Night Stalker, Ironside, $6 Million Man, Emergency, Starsky and Hutch, Rockford Files, like. She did a lot.
I watched all of
Jake
those
and the Fat Man.
I watched all of those religiously, except for the Roxford Files.
Yeah, that's before my time.
Yeah, she was in a lot of TV, and the movies that she was in, it looks like they're all like horror type movies. There's only three or four, you know, with The Howling, Deep Space, The Forgotten One, and something called Jaded. Yeah, interesting. But yeah, it was, you know, definitely check it out if you ever get a chance. You can see it for free.
Check it out without your phone, Chris.
Yeah, put your phone in the other room and just watch the show. Watch it for what it is.
I'll see what I can do.
But that's all I got today.
Do you have anything else, Chris?
No.
And I am done as well. Other than I started reading some Gen 13. That's another.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that's another one I'm trying to fill. The Wildstorm stuff. Mm-hmm. I already filmed Stormwatch. I did Cyber Force full collection. Now I need to finish Gen 13 and Wildcats.
I think I own one Gen 13 issue. But it's something that I always wanted to kind of
For me, it was one of the best because it was like a sort of like a Teen Titans, even though they looked older.
Mm-hmm.
That they escaped a military thing that they were, you know, were creating people with these abilities. It goes back to like Team 7 if you ever read that, but a lot of their fathers and stuff were involved in the Wildstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And they escape this facility, and they're kind of on the run. Just a bunch of kids that are joined.
Now, do you have every cover of issue one?
No, I was never a completist on covers, but I do own the miniseries. There's a miniseries before the ongoing kicks off, and then they continue off in Wildstorm. And I think I own the entire mini, and I own most of the stuff in Wildstorm. It went on quite a while. I think it was his most successful. I think it was more successful than Wildcats as far as like.
It seemed like it to me.
It got popular.
I'd like to read the stuff, but I mean, at this point, I don't see me looking for 75 or 77 issues of this title, unless I went somewhere at a con and they were all in the 50 cent bin or something like that.
Yeah. If you're not into that kind of thing, I don't know, you might be, but I like it. I like to fill in holes.
Well, no, we've talked, I do too, but when
but
the
I'm less,
hole
I'm less,
is 76
I'm less,
out of the 77 issues, it's...
Well, I think I'm down to 20 issues I still need to get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me losing focus a lot. Like right now I'm trying to complete my Atlas collection, which those are awesome comics, man. Holy shit, they're good. They only lasted like a year, but oh man.
Yeah, and I saw you're getting all the
I'm starting to get
the newer
lot,
ones. Those are the ones
those.
That I actually bought at the
The
at
newer
the time
ones aren't out. As nearly as good in my opinion.
No.
They're even though some of the creative teams are pretty good, they just don't have like the main magic. It's kind of like
they didn't last any longer.
It's
kind of
like when Marvel took over cross gen stuff. It's just not the same. Like if you try to reinvent it, it just doesn't work. I think they could have kept the same concept for Grim Ghost and been more successful, because I think it's an awesome concept. But
can I ask you a question, because I know you've been picking these up? So the second series, I'm looking at Grim Ghost, okay?
Yeah.
So I've got issue 1 through 3.
Yeah.
As far as I knew, that's all that came out. But here it's listing 4, 5, and 6. I never even saw that those ever were released.
Yeah, I just bought them.
Okay, all right, so they really did come out. Because you know how sometimes they'll put them in there if they were solicited but never came out?
Yeah, they came out. These ones did come out. Matter of fact, I started reading it. So I read number 0 and then 4. And I think 5 and 6 I have on my to-read pile.
And I just ended up missing
it. Actually,
them.
It actually got better, though. Like,
just stopped.
Yeah, 5. Around 4 is where I started to buy into it a little bit more. Whereas, like, with issue 1 of the original, I was, like, there. It was like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I want to complete that Dead universe. And that shouldn't take long, except there's a couple of, like, romance titles that, man, I've been looking for at least 6 months, and I can't find them. They just don't exist. I mean, they exist, but not anybody willing to get rid of them or in right. most accessible places. So, but I want to finish that universe, and then I also want to finish my new universe. And then I want to get in my closet that, my guest bedroom, which Chris was in, because that closet's not inventoried. And now that I'm into Spawn, I need to get in there, because there's Spawn comics in there, I know, and I need to figure out what I have and what I still need. So.
Yeah, well, you gotta start working on that. But you accidentally rebought.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know these ones I didn't rebuy because they're too early. Like, they're the... Mm. I know roughly the time frame of that closet. I just don't know what's I just don't know what's in it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So that I need a weekend where I could just. Right now is actually a perfect time, because
I was gonna say
the bed is put together, so it's not the full size, and I have that whole room to move around in. So I really should get all those long boxes out and see what I got.
Well, some of these Atlas titles are much older than I thought. Is that a different company?
Well, it's 70.
1950. No, I'm looking at 1950.
That was, you're looking at Timely Atlas, which was before Marvel took over.
Marvel, oh, okay. Proper. So that's not
no,
the same.
You gotta look at, like, Grim Ghost, and then go from that.
All the 70s.
Yeah,
ones.
The 70s ones.
All right.
It was the same. Believe it or not, though, there's a relationship between that. The publisher is the same. So the publisher,
really?
From that Golden Age era, he decided to get in the comic business again.
Yeah.
And that's how Atlas Comics came out.
All right, no idea.
Yeah. What I'm trying to find out, and I've tried to hit up a couple of people that might know, like creators and such, but I don't have an answer yet, is I want to find out, like, why it failed. Like, why it failed so early. Because Atlas Comics was actually doing creator-owned before, you know, like, in the 70s, which is pretty amazing.
So what romance one are you looking for?
It's in there if you click on the titles. Like,
yeah, I'm looking at them, but like, there's one from 1974 that says Gothic Romances. It looks like it might have been a one issue magazine.
Yeah, that's what I want. Gothic Romances.
Okay. Okay. I'm only guessing it's a magazine by.
No,
the
there's
cover.
Some black and white stuff in there too as magazines. There's some black and white magazines, because this was the time that Marvel was doing a lot of the black and white magazines, so mm-hmm. they did a couple of magazines as well. But I want to go all in. Like, when I completed my Malibu collection, I included Conan the Savage magazine because it had a appearance of Rune. So, like, I want to go that deep. I want to get all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one here called Vicky that basically looks like Archie Comics.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have that either. Right now I'm focusing on the hero stuff, which I'm pretty close to completing, and then I'm going to do the military stuff because that's the next genre I want. And mm-hmm. then all the romance stuff I'm always looking out for any company, because
these aren't as cheap as I would have thought either.
No.
Like, I would have thought you could get these for less than, well, not less than cover, but, you know, like a dollar or two, and they're all double digits, $20,
yeah.
$13.
I think the latest one I ordered is going to be Planet of the Vampires. That's the one I'm getting.
Mm. I've got Iron Jaw number 2 and 3.
Yeah, I just completed Iron Jaw, and then I think I'm completing Brute. I completed Phoenix.
Chris, so, we should have got. I know for sure David Adams had a bunch of these. Like I'm talking a couple of years ago at the 50 cent bins. And like they're all like listed $16, $14, $10.
Oh, wow.
I should have picked them all up. Bet you they're not there anymore.
Could have sold them to Mike.
Yeah, there, know, could, right? There you go. You could have turned a profit.
Right.
You could have found gothic romances and be all over it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one to find, I think, because I've done a lot of one research on that one and haven't been able to track one down. Maybe that's one of my listeners can find it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Point me in the direction. But you've been listening to Geek Brunch. We're having couches delivered. So
you are?
Yeah, we're having new couches delivered in about 45 minutes.
All right.
So it sucks, though, for a whole day, though. Like last night, we had no couches. So we have like one chair and one other chair that we didn't get rid of. And we couldn't really sit there and watch TV.
Just lie on the floor.
I did. That's what I did. I ended up lying on the floor and watching an episode of Gotham. And that's where I found that Clank. And I was like, man, I know that name from somewhere. And I Googled it and I saw it was the Batman. And I was like, I just watched that on Amazon or something like that. And like, I watched the whole season. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Oh, man, you changed your name, Chris. I'm never going to get it right. And then you keep
Chris,
morphing your name, so I don't even know what your Twitter handle is anymore.
I try to tag you, and it's like, what? Where is he?
I'm trying to keep you guys on your toes.
Yeah.
And it's working.
I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. Rob is at Rob Krieger, and Chris is at what?
Robot Wolf Face.
I thought you were Cosmos now.
That's just the, you know, like the name that where it says.
I keep getting
your name.
Confused because it looks like waffle to me.
It's not my ad name.
You're hungry.
You have the wolf face. I somehow register waffle and.
Could be Robot Waffles if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I follow somebody, my nephew's Wafflecopter, so I'm like confused. And we're on Facebook.
I'm not your nephew.
You're not?
No.
No.
Sorry.
You could be, in terms of age, possibly.
Well, anybody, I mean, when it comes to someone's nephew, I mean, it doesn't matter age, really.
Kind of. If it gets too, that means that you had kids really, really young. But
or there could be like.
It depends on your how many siblings you have, yeah. Right? And how far apart your siblings
yeah,
are.
Yeah, if like the siblings
yeah,
are really
far
apart.
You could have a sibling that's 20 years older than you.
And that happens, believe it or not.
And you could have an uncle or an aunt that's younger than you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Weird.
I don't have that situation.
You could be my nephew, Mike.
I could.
You just blew my mind.
I could be.
I'm gonna make you my nephew. Wait, I don't know what that means. That could have some weird implications.
Yeah,
that means
weird.
You can leave everything to your nephew.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I hope you guys have a wonderful Sunday.
Yeah, you too.
You
I'm
too.
Glad you were able to. Sure. Everybody was able to join because it was kind of a last-minute thing. This was a Geek Brunch week.
Yeah, where's Bill?
Bill was going to be able to record, but he only had like a small window, and I was just like, I'll see if I can move the other one in.
Yeah, there you go.
Because, like, if I could get a good podcast time in, I'd go for it. But I know that summer's here and it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
It's not summer isn't sort of over in my eyes until September.
Yeah. Our Septembers have been beautiful the past maybe five, 7 years where you get just as nice weather in September as you do in like
terms
early
of school,
July
though, school
and
school has
June.
Started here in Colorado, like oh. for kids. Yeah.
Labor week for us.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good one, and I hope that you figure out how to make that Death Star Transformer happen.
I'm going to see what I can do yeah. while I'm watching X-Men the Animated Series.
That's right. Get in there on that.
Go. Yep.
You're going to be watching it in one window, and then it'll be in the other window.
That's right.
It might be like worth that. It just to see what it's like, just so you get the tone of it.
I probably
because then
will
because then because then you can know if you if you're even worth if it's even worth vesting in. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Let's see what I can do.
Well, check out The Howling. I'm curious to see it just because of the dating and the porno place, but I think that reminded me of Taxi Cab Driver too, and I'm like, I want to see that. Because he was such an odd character. He, like, takes her there, and it's like, that's awkward.
Hey, you know, whatever yeah. whatever works.
I guess it was a thing, because Guy Gardner did it, too, with Ice. Yeah. I always remember that dating episode. It was some, who's the villain in that, too? I can't remember, but he had a black costume. I can't think of what it was. I think it was a Green Lantern villain. But you guys have a good one. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.